Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it's time for what's become one of your favorite features on Intelligent Medicine, which is our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla Mudin is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. She has a master's degree in the field of nutrition. She's also a registered dietitian. And first of all, welcome aboard, Layla. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Great. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. But I'm angry and I'm upset because once again, we're compelled to man the battle stations. It's kind of damage control mode because the media has unleashed yet another savage attack on supplements. Did you see the headlines?
Yes, I have, and I'm just as angry. And you know what? This is becoming like a regular state of being for us.
Exactly. So
we are always having to do this damage control at this point, these supplement wars.
So I'm going to sound the klaxons, damage control, all hands on deck. All right. battle stations, we're going to man the...
It's true, we're going to have to sound that more often. Apparently this is only going to get worse.
It is. And, you know, the first salvo in this most recent attack, I mean, this is an ongoing thing. And in fact, recently in a blog, if you subscribe to the newsletter, the Intelligent Medicine newsletter, you may have seen this. This summer, I was already called upon to counteract an editorial by Dr. Paul Offit, which was entitled, and it was in the op-ed pages of the New York Times, which is a very privileged place. Millions of eyeballs see this. And it was a very bold op-ed piece entitled, "Don't Take Your Vitamins." And, you know, for those who don't know who Paul Offit is, he's the prototypical quackbuster. He just wrote a book called Do You Believe in Magic? A la the Loving Spoonfuls song. And what he's saying is kind of snarkily that alternative medicine and taking vitamins and supplements is magical thinking, and it's all just a big ripoff and a placebo. And so back in already this summer, I wrote a blog entitled Don't Take Your Vitamins? So Not. And so once again, we're called upon to do damage control on yet another editorial. His latest editorial is entitled Skip the Supplements. Did you see that one?
I did. I did.
And of course, this is accompanied, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is accompanied by a news story that, I mean, if you go to Google and you look up vitamins, you'll see 456 stories with on the theme of the following. Here's some examples. You've seen them. Vitamins lack clear health benefits, may pose risks. Or this one. Should we toss our vitamin pills? Or how about this one? How do Americans waste $28 billion a year? On vitamins, doctors say.
No, on pharmaceuticals.
Right. Well, that we're talking maybe $300 billion.
Yeah.
And this one, this headline, which is really over the top, Medical Journal. Case closed against vitamin pills. And so, you know, usually we field the many questions that our listeners send us, but there's been a big hue and cry on my Facebook page, and people have asked me, you know, this is what I do. I mean, I live and breathe this stuff. Dr. Hoffman, tell us it ain't so. Please provide us with a critique and analysis of the new so-called vitamin studies that debunk the benefits of vitamins and provide a contretemps to that, kind of a rebuttal.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do, at least in the very beginning of this. I don't even know if we're going to get to questions because we're going to devote most of the podcast to taking this apart. So first of all, did you read the article in the Annals of Internal Medicine? Actually, there were several articles there.
I read the abstract, yes.
Okay. And so you know, why don't you give us a little thumbnail summary of what some of those articles say?
Well, they're basically telling us that the vitamins are actually a waste, that there is no clear-cut benefit for anyone. And unfortunately, the organization I belong to, the American Dietetic Association, or rather the Nutrition and Dietetics, is agreeing to some degree, and I do want to clarify this, that healthy people should have no need for vitamins. Well, we need to define healthy people.
Right.
Most people are not healthy. Even people who are optimizing are not necessarily in perfect health. And there is appropriate use of supplements even for those people.
Right. And so say a person is, quote, healthy, but maybe they carry a genetic propensity for heart disease or blood clots or osteoporosis, and they're ostensibly healthy. That is, until they're unhealthy. You know, we're all auditioning for various diseases later in life.
That's right. And even those who are genetically predisposed to not methylating well or absorbing folate well, they need a different kind of folate supplement, not just the RDA folate in your run-of-the-mill corner drugstore supplement.
Right.
Nice. One of the biggest flaws in this is they're, first of all, they're looking at meta-analyses, and that means they get to pick whichever analyses they want to look at. And a lot of these studies are also based on research that is primarily looking at dietary recall. We already know from the scientific research that dietary recall is not great. Well, were you taking your supplements 5 years ago? Yes. Well, what were you taking? Gee, scratch head, I think I was taking my multi and my B-complex and my fish oil, but you know, I'm not sure.
Right.
We can't base quality research on this kind of flawed methodology.
Well, it's a little bit like asking people, do you brush your teeth every day? And most people would say, well, yes, I do. But, you know, maybe it's wishful thinking that they brush their teeth every day. Or, you know, do you eat, three to five portions of fruits and vegetables every day? Many people will patriotically say, yes, I do. And similarly, many people will say, yeah, I take a multiple every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one of the flaws in these studies that are cited as evidence that vitamins don't make a difference. Also, you know, while we're taking a look at this, one of the points that I think is a really useful take home on this is that, in my opinion, what these studies are debunking are a very outmoded concept of vitamins and supplements. Maybe you call it 20th century nutrition, and we're well into the 21st century. These studies are looking at basically cheap or poor quality multivitamins, maybe a Centrum or a one-a-day vitamin, and they are looking at, for example, vitamin E in the wrong form, maybe D-alpha tocopherol or alpha tocopherol acetate, cheap, single spectrum, not broad spectrum forms of the nutrients that we like to advocate these, or beta carotene as a single nutrient and not the mixed carotenoids.
Yeah.
So many of these studies are looking at outmoded forms of supplements, and it may be that, by taking a single cheap multivitamin that's got preservatives and, artificial,
artificial color lakes and fillers, and not to mention the RDA. Can I talk for a minute about the
please.
RDA?
Yeah, yeah.
It's become more useless than anything else. RDA is the recommended daily allowance of nutrients to keep from having a deficiency, to keep from getting scurvy. You have to make sure you get, at least 60 milligrams of vitamin C so that you don't get scurvy. But listen, we're not interested in preventing deficiencies. Those are already pretty much prevented in this country. Okay, we're interested in optimization. We're interested in therapeutic doses for particular conditions, for the maintenance of health as we get older, for anti-aging, for putting out the fire of free radicals so that we can lengthen our lives. I mean, the entire context of this is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, these days, I'm more interested in having people take specific nutrients like ubiquinol CoQ10 or curcumin, which is a potent extract of turmeric. or something like EGCG from green tea, than telling people, oh, just take a, you know, a one-a-day multivitamin. I think that that's a form of nutrition that is, well, you know, basically an insurance policy. Maybe, you know, there are a few people who are missing critical nutrients like B12, or they don't have enough vitamin D. So this provides them with a little extra buffer against nutritional deficiency. But, you know, if you, frankly, you know, if you eat pretty well, a balanced diet, I mean, who in America really eats a balanced diet anymore? But, you know, you're not going to suffer from malnutrition. You're not going to be like, you know, one of these, kids with a swollen belly in, Zambia or something.
Right.
Like that,
with marasmus or, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's where, I mean, clearly these people who are starving, they could utilize a one-a-day multivitamin because they have critical deficiencies. Most Americans may not have critical deficiencies, but it's a question of whether we're dealing with deficiency versus optimization, as you said earlier.
Right. And well, here's the other side of that. I have not met one of our patients, Dr. Hoffman, I'm sure you haven't either, who hasn't needed some kind of vitamin D supplementation.
Right.
Who hasn't, if they had, say, a high homocysteine level, who's needed additional B12 and B6 and folate, much more than a multivitamin could ever provide. So what is the use, actually, of the multivitamin? Really? The kind that they're using in all of these, in all of their experiments, if this is what they're looking at, you know, your Centrum or your One-A-Day and all of that, they're not terrific vitamins.
Right. It reminds
me. So what were they actually measuring here?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of those, you know, in Eastern Europe, in the socialist countries during communism, they used to have, you know, the socialist car. And the socialist car, you know, would barely run. It was like this little tiny car with tiny wheels that was constantly breaking down. It was, you know, made out of some cheap form of tin. And that was like the government-issue car that was like, you know, basically it did get you from one place to another if it didn't break down. But it certainly didn't respond to individual requirements. It wasn't very reliable. And ultimately, with the end of communism, it became obsolete. So,
thank goodness.
You know, that's the one-size-fits-all approach. And, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't really work. So,
And what you said is critical.
Yes.
There is no such thing as one size fits all. This is the wrong way to look at anything.
Right.
Just like I believe there should not be one standard USDA government my plate for every American, there should not be a standardized multivitamin or whatever for every American, because not everybody is the same. Not everyone is the same. We all have different metabolisms. We have unique biochemistries. This whole approach is incorrect.
Right. You know, and it brings up, you know, a different issue. And I actually wrote an article about this, which will appear in our newsletter. And if you get a chance, subscribe to our newsletter. Send us an email to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll put you on the newsletter mailing list. And even if you do this in a week or two, you can kind of scroll back in the newsletters, and you can get the newsletter that includes my comment, my blog, why you should keep taking your supplements. But in that blog that is about to be published, I write about a double standard. I mean, you know, clearly there is a double standard. You know, if you tell consumers to stop taking supplements, how is it at the same time you can approve drugs for the treatment of cancer that cost tens of thousands of dollars per year for patients to use, and they don't even cure the cancer? What they do is maybe in some studies they're approved because they can extend life, you know, maybe a month and a half. And they think, well, great, that's a benefit because, you know, look, if you extend somebody's life for a month and a half, that's a big deal. That gives them a little extra time to get their affairs in order, spend some more time with their family, so they allow these drugs to be on the market. But at the same time that you allow these sometimes very toxic, expensive drugs to be prescribed, you're going to say, don't think about taking a supplement. I mean, talk about a double standard.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, I mean, think of all the medications. You know, you go to just a regular drugstore, and the drugstore aisles are full of medications for whatever, aches and pains or constipation, that have really harmful side effects. You know, just Tylenol and Advil Motrin, the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, routinely can cause kidney or liver failure. They can cause problems with blood clotting. They increase cardiovascular risk. There are actually warnings on these products. Or they can drill a hole in your stomach and send you to the emergency room with life-threatening gastrointestinal bleeding. And yet these are fine and authorized, no problem, at the same time that you see major editorials in scientific journals saying, stop taking vitamins, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
I mean, that truly is a double standard. Or
there are umpteen times more deaths caused by pharmaceutical medicine.
Right.
What is it, over 200,000
right.
deaths
yet,
per year?
And, yeah. and yet the thrust of these medical journals is that, oh, okay, the benefits are proven of these medications. Well, why is it then that the Food and Drug Administration approves medications very often, and then within a year or three or five or ten, the very self-same medications are withdrawn from the marketplace because it turns out that they're too toxic and dangerous?
So it just
boggles the mind.
Yeah.
All the kids who, you know, we're told not to give our kids vitamins and supplements, omega-3 fatty acids that might improve their focus and concentration. And at the same time, we prescribe ADD medications to now, 12 or 15% of kids in school. 1 out of 7 kids in school are now taking medications to help them with focus and concentration. Are these medications less harmful than vitamins, more efficacious?
Absolutely not.
Clearly there's some
situations. They're giving them the equivalent of speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, to help maintain their focus. These kids then become jittery, anorexic, they're not able to sleep. How does that child function better the next day at school? How?
I mean, admittedly, for every drug that's out there, there are cases where people really need them. For example, there are some cases where people who are at very high risk of repeat heart attack or they've had bypass surgery, there's some studies that show that statin drugs are beneficial. But when we say don't take supplements, but that 75 million Americans now are eligible for taking statin drugs with the scantest of evidence that that's going to make a difference, it truly double standard. So, you'll see some of those.
What will happen then, Dr. Hoffman, is more people will get dementia before their time. So then, of course, there will be another drug for, they'll be on Aricept and so forth and so on. And, it just keeps the cycle going.
Absolutely.
Of pharmaceutical care. I have a story to tell about somebody who was taking Advil on their doctor's recommendation for the arthritis pain in his knee. And his doctor said to him, you could take 2 to 4 Advil every 6 hours every day. And he did this, for a couple of months. And then he noticed that he was starting to become pale and ashen. And then he noticed that his stool was a black, tarry color. He wound up in that emergency room, just like so many other people do, with a gastric ulcer. It was terrifying for him. This guy, he's a professional actor. He's flying all over the place. He had to put everything on hold, to be in the hospital.
Yeah.
But this is the advice given.
Yeah. I mean, we can think of many examples of that.
Yeah.
But so let's spend a little time looking at the studies themselves, because, with so many newspaper articles, it's kind of like, let's give our listeners some ammunition, because if they're, going to their holiday dinner and maybe they set out their vitamins in front of them and some relative says to them, you're wasting your time, didn't you read all those articles? Or, perhaps they're going to be going to the doctor's office in a month or two and the doctor says, are you still taking those stupid vitamins? Did you see the articles in the paper about how vitamins are worthless? I mean, how can we arm our listeners into sticking to their guns about taking supplements?
First, people have to, remember that you can't believe everything you read, and just because something is published doesn't mean it's published worthy or has integrity or validity or reliability or any of those kind of things. We have to scrutinize everything, not just take what they tell us on news programs or even in the paper.
Absolutely.
I mean, if Paul Offit is being given free rein on op-ed pages at New York Times, wow, that's a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, look,
people
should question
that.
Yeah, people should question that because he may sound like the voice of reason or moderation, but really he's quite an extremist in the view that he takes about alternative medicine, that most, if not all, forms of alternative medicine are a waste of time or quackery. He inveighs against things like acupuncture, chiropractic, proven modalities that make a big difference. All supplements, in his mind, are virtually worthless, perhaps with the exception of, you know, giving somebody B12 if they have pernicious anemia or, you know, if someone has severe.
If you're over 50, it's likely you're not going to make the intrinsic factor in your gut anymore to absorb that B12. You're going to need additional B12.
Right.
If you're vegan, if you're vegetarian, which is still being touted as a healthy diet, you're going to need B12. You're going to need iron. You're going to need selenium. You're going to get, come on. These are the people who need the vitamins as well. We're talking about most Americans here. So this whole thing is just ridiculous. Oh, I'm livid.
Honestly, it's just right. Well, so looking at the articles in the Annals of Internal Medicine, I don't want to get too technical here because it really takes these days a scientist or a statistician to properly critique a scientific article. And I don't claim to be a PhD in statistics. But I do have some savvy in critiquing and evaluating scientific articles. And so without getting into too many technical details, let me just share some of my concerns about these articles, which are said to debunk supplements. First of all, except for one of them, and I'll talk about that one in just a minute, they are what are called meta-analyses. Now, as you know, Layla, a meta-analysis mm-hmm. is actually not a new original study. It's a study of studies. So they go into the scientific literature and they say, well, let's see which studies answer our question. And in so doing, they get to cherry pick. They get to say, well, I don't like this study because this study isn't, for one reason or another, it doesn't meet our criteria. But as a result, there's a certain amount of subjectivity. There's some cherry picking that can go on, where you can throw out one study and include another. And meta-analyses are very, very susceptible to bias. You can often, the old expression, the devil can quote scriptures to his own purposes. With meta-analyses, you can also pick and choose among the studies that support your point of view. The other thing is that, you know, as you said, we don't even know if these patients really were taking the vitamins that they were supposed to be taking, and their memories and recalls are very, very subject to question.
What's interesting is the studies that they picked, none of them were the studies that showed actual benefit, and there are reams and reams and
yes.
reams of that research for decades.
You know, if there weren't studies like that.
They very conveniently ignored all
right.
of that.
If there weren't studies like that, I've been broadcasting now for over 25 years. And I take pains with each broadcast to share with listeners peer-reviewed scientific studies that are published in medical journals. And, you know, on a given program or podcast, I might cite five or six or seven scientific studies that show the benefits of one or another herbal product, nutraceutical, vitamin for a specific condition. And if these were not, there, or if they weren't for real, there just would have been dead air. I would have announced, welcome to Health Talk or welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and there would have been 1 hour of complete silence during those times. So, I think that's a point well taken. Okay. Another point that I would share with listeners who are looking for a way to explain these results, which just don't match their personal experience, is that there is this tendency. This is an interesting thing about this one. People who take supplements, they may actually be sicker people, or they may be people who are worried because they have family health problems. So in studies that compare vitamin takers to non-vitamin takers, you may actually get a little bit of a skew towards sicker patients. I mean, if somebody's in perfect, robust health and everybody in their family is fine, there may, not always, but there may be a tendency to say, hey, what do I need these vitamins or supplements for? I'm fine. But, somebody who's been mm-hmm. told that they have one or another problem or they're worried about something, they might gravitate towards supplements as a way of fending off disease. And hence, there's a little bit of an inherent potential distorting factor comparing, quote, healthy populations to people who take vitamins.
Yeah.
You know, there was one study in the Annals that wasn't a meta-analysis. And I happen to know a lot about that study because I actually helped design that. Did you know that I helped design the chelation trial?
No.
Yeah, actually, I was a consultant in the early phases of that.
Wow.
And in some versions of that, my name actually appears among the authors of that study. Well, okay, so the very self-same guy who published a study that we talked about earlier, I guess it was the beginning of the year, that showed that chelation was beneficial. They also studied vitamins in that study, but that wasn't the primary goal of the study. They looked at vitamins as a factor in influencing the benefit or lack thereof of chelation. And what they found was that overall, whether you took vitamins or not in this study didn't matter. It didn't make a difference for these patients who'd had heart attacks. So so they actually got to publish this article demonstrating that vitamins didn't make a difference for people who had heart attacks. But that's really not,
that's not what they were supposed to measure.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not considered scientifically valid. In other words, if you do a study about one thing and you find something entirely different, you cannot use that as proof positive of the second thing. You can kind of say, well, that's interesting, but really the study was not designed to do that. However, I will point out that in this chelation study, when they added chelation vitamins and chelation were given together, the benefits of chelation were enhanced. And that's not something that they talk about in the Annals of Internal Medicine. It's interesting.
That's unfortunate that they don't talk about that at all, because it's very, very important information.
Yeah. So in fact, there was a slight benefit with the vitamins in these heart attack patients. They were followed for a relatively short period of time, less than 5 years. So it is conceivable that that benefit would have been more pronounced had they taken these vitamins longer. I'll just point that out. But it didn't reach, quote, statistical significance. So another, you know, I'm just going to keep going on this theme because, you know, we just have to kind of think about, sometimes, you know, somebody will present something as a foregone conclusion or a fact, vitamins are worthless, but you got to look at, you know, what is the evidence and is there a flaw in the reasoning? You know, huge studies like this tend to overlook the benefits of supplementation for certain subgroups. So, for example, you're looking at 100,000 people, and you just don't see – there's not a big difference, you know, between the vitamin takers and the non-vitamin takers. But you might notice that for 500 of these individuals, there's a very distinct benefit. These might be people with a genetic problem or might be people with a certain medical condition or disease, and you actually – we'll see a distinct benefit for a subgroup. For 500 people, that's huge. But, you know, if it's 100,000 people, it won't show up in a big study like this. So, you know, we know, for example, just this week, a study came out showing that multivitamins are beneficial for people with AIDS. Mm-hmm. Or HIV. It slows the progression to AIDS and severe immune deficiency. We have a lot of patients who have inflammatory bowel disease. They don't absorb nutrients very well, so we give them the critical nutrients that they may be low in. That's a case where that's a subgroup. I mean, maybe 0.5% of the population of America has ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. That could be still tens of thousands of individuals, but it's a very low percentage. So, you know, overall, when a bunch of people take vitamins, healthy people, you won't see that. And drug depletions. You can talk a little bit about drug depletions. How many Americans take drugs?
Exactly. And who isn't on a pharmaceutical these days? Let's just start with the statins.
Well, the vast majority of people over 50 take not just one, but sometimes many drugs. Yeah.
These people are going to be very deficient in CoQ10.
Yeah.
So they need to be supplemented with CoQ10. I mean, for one thing. Also, vitamin C and vitamin E are critical as well. There are all kinds of medications, PPIs, proton pump inhibitors.
They inhibit B12 and magnesium.
Magnesium and calcium and all of our minerals.
Yep.
Certain other steroids and anticonvulsants actually prevent the absorption of vitamin D and all of that. I mean, there's all kinds of medications, diabetes drugs. People on metformin or other diabetes drugs, they need additional folate. They need additional B vitamins like B12. You know, there's you know, anybody who's on a pharmaceutical is going to wind up depleted in some very important micronutrient. So what are we talking about? Of course, a multivitamin is going to at least help that person a little bit.
You know, the other thing that I object to with this this particular series of articles is not so much their conclusion that vitamins are of no value. You know, that could be that is a controversy. It could be argued back and forth. But it is the sort of bitter partisanship with which they adopt this point of view. They actually wrote an editorial in the Annals of Internal Medicine, which states that not only are vitamins worthless, but they may be harmful, and that we should actually tell people to stop taking vitamins. And then they use the term case closed, as if this is like, you know, the final appeal at the Supreme Court, and, you know, for all time and eternity, vitamins should be banished, and we should even abandon wasteful expenditures on research on vitamins and supplements. I think that that's, I mean, that actually reveals to me that the people behind this are not reasonable or balanced individuals. They've got an axe to grind against supplements.
Absolutely. They, you know, they have basically dissed and dismissed the supplement industry. It's very important. On one of our listservs, Dr. Hoffman, where we get some information, somebody did reveal that they work for an NBC affiliate, and they see they are inundated with anti-supplement propaganda coming over into them. So, you know, they're being bombarded by the pharmaceutical companies with all kinds of anti-supplement, anti-vitamin propaganda, and this is why we're here. This is only going to get worse.
Yeah,
because
you know,
the pharmaceutical industry is so rich, and you know how money wins.
Right. What I see happening is that, you know, clearly we know that for a long time, certain politicians in league with the Food and Drug Administration, possibly in league with certain scientists and medical people, have an agenda, and their agenda is to further empower the government to regulate supplements. And actually what they want to do, they make the false claim, and we hear this again and again, that supplements are unregulated. It's a vast unregulated market. You know, it's like, you know, you pays your money and you takes your chances. There's like, you know, they keep exaggerating claims of toxicity and danger. And what they want to do is they simply want to turn vitamins and supplements into medications. They want to say that if you want to introduce a new vitamin, you've got to introduce it like a medication. Now, we know that the average medication costs several hundred thousand dollars to introduce into the marketplace. It requires research and development. It requires lawyers. It requires backdoor negotiations with the Food and Drug Administration, applications. And we know that the pharmaceutical companies are fully equipped, very well situated to arrange to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my feeling is that what they want to do is they want to put supplements, this is a very lucrative business, by the way, they want to put supplements within the realm of the pharmaceutical industry, because the pharmaceutical industry has a working relationship, you know, hand in glove, revolving door with the FDA. And I really think it's a power play to take supplements out of the hands of small, nimble, innovative companies and put them in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry, and also thereby probably take about 90% of the supplements off our shelves. You know, maybe just have like really paltry doses and have a very few, very small selection. But that's what they envision. I mean, they really want to do this. Let me just
That's just so scary. Yeah.
Let me quote from the New York Times op-ed by Paul Offit that just came out a couple of weeks ago. He says in his article, "Skip the supplements." He says, until the day comes when medical studies prove that these supplements have legitimate benefits, and until the FDA has the political backing and resources to regulate them like drugs, individuals should simply steer clear. So, you know, I really see that's a very transparent agenda, that what he wants to do is spearhead an effort where supplements become rare, perhaps available only via doctor's prescription, made by pharmaceutical companies, very carefully supervised and approved by the FDA. The FDA, by the way, is quite hostile to the vast majority of supplements. They just as soon see 90% of them go away.
Well, 60% of the board, they're all pharmaceutical executives, former executives of pharmaceutical companies.
It's a revolving door. The way that you get a job in a pharmaceutical company is first you do your due diligence. You work for the government. It doesn't pay that well, but you learn the ropes. Then you quit or you retire early, and you get a position with a pharmaceutical company making five or six times your salary because you know how to schmooze the government. You know how to work the regulatory controls so that you can get your products approved. But, what bugs me is that the media is very, very compliant. They're very uncritical of these press releases that are released by, as you said, you said you actually got this from, was it from a patient or was it from a listener?
It was from one of our listservs where we get some of the news and pertinent scientific information.
So the point is that this person works in a news bureau, and they're constantly getting, press releases and propaganda against vitamins and supplements, because there are some people who are really pushing this agenda very strongly, which is to basically put supplements under very, very strict government regulation.
Yeah,
and I kind of get it a little bit, because the scientists who wrote this article in the Annals of Internal Medicine, I mean, I'm going to be quite blunt here, they're very, very hardworking, very smart people who, frankly, they probably don't make a heck of a lot of money as scientists. The average scientist, it's a very altruistic profession. If you're very brilliant, you will go into research science and you'll write papers in medical journals. And frankly, it's a little hard to make even like a six-figure salary, And what they see is people in vitamin companies making millions. I mean, they look at $28 billion spent by these idiot people out there on vitamins and supplements. And the people who run these companies, they figure, are the people who were C students in high school, who barely graduated junior college. And they're out there, making a fortune selling vitamins to the gullible public. That's the way they look at it. And so there's a certain amount of, shall we say, professional jealousy going on, because they feel that the supplement industry is getting away with murder.
Who's getting away with murder now? Here's the irony. Yeah. The pharmaceutical industry is regulated, yet over 200,000 people a year die, not from doses that were wrong, but from the adverse effects of medications, from all kinds of side effects. One of the biggest things I do all day long for our patients who come in and they're on several medications, we go over the side effects. We go over the interactions. They're very concerned about side effects and things. They feel it or something. They're concerned long-term use of a particular supplement, say like a PPI, like a Nexium or a Prilosec or something. Long-term, you may get osteoporosis. You may become deficient in other nutrients like B12 and magnesium and so forth and so on. These are things to be worried about, and this is an industry that's regulated.
Yes, indeed.
And
also
with black box warnings and all of that.
And moreover, I would say that the notion that the supplement industry is not regulated, that is a total fallacy, because I'm personally involved in, I make a very few supplements. We make certain products for the Hoffman Center, EGCG among them, olive leaf extract. We make foundation formula, and we make a great product called PhytoGuard. And whenever I make these products, we have to very, very carefully adhere to labeling regulations. We have the products inspected and checked for purity. The factory that makes these products is under GMP, good manufacturing
practices. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's inspected by the government. So really, this notion that there is no control by the government, there is a lot of control, but it's not like total blanket suppression and pre-approval. Before you can even come up with a supplement, you have to petition the government, go through a process which may take years and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to get a new supplement on the market. That would totally choke and stifle the supplement industry. And And the margin of safety with supplements is such that, look, I'm not saying that there's not the potential for harm with supplements. We got to be careful about that. And I constantly warn listeners about potential issues and problems as they come up. But let's face it, we're talking about a trivial problem compared with the huge death toll that's associated with the medications.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So this is going to go on, and we're giving an emergency summit.
Yes.
And yeah. I've just confirmed the date, February 20 a.m.
Say that again, please.
We're February 26th, that's a Wednesday.
Okay.
From 6 to 8 p.m., you and I will be giving an emergency summit about this war on natural medicine.
Right, and we're going to include more details than we just shared with you in this podcast,
yeah.
Because actually the next podcast that I'm going to do is on the subject of herbal supplements. And there, just as there's an attack on vitamins, there's also an attack underway on herbal supplements, claiming that they're full of toxins, that they're adulterated, that you don't get what you pay for. And I will be talking to Mark Blumenthal in a subsequent podcast, which you can find at drhoffman.com, on the subject of the safety, purity, and quality of herbal supplements and what the industry is doing about it. Because, it's a concern. If there's some bad actors there, bad players, and there certainly are, in every industry there are, they make, they give the rest of us a bad name. But we're going to talk about all aspects of that at the upcoming seminar in February. It's time for some damage control.
Yeah.
And, we're going to have to sound the klaxon warning once again. All hands on deck, all right?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's go.
I think we got to do this, though, because unfortunately, the media is really dominated. The mainstream media is really dominated by the voices of doubt, who are sowing, dissension and doubt among earnest consumers of nutritional supplements, and they're poisoning the well for the many people who want to take their health in their own hands. And we have so few avenues for getting the word out about the benefits of supplements and natural self-care that we've got to use, we've got to use whatever means we have at our disposal. And many of our listeners, many of the people who follow me on Facebook and Twitter and read the newsletter and our patients, and as you know, Layla, they really look to us for an authoritative critique of some of these worrisome stories that are constantly being broadcast. So we're going to have an emergency summit. We're going to talk about some of the latest concerns that have been raised about supplements. We'll try and provide an honest appraisal because, look, we're not rah-rah-rah, gung-ho about everything. We're going to call it as we see it. If there's some problems with certain supplements or if there's some doubts about the effectiveness of one or another supplement, we're going to honestly report it. But
that's what keeps us worthy of our credentials.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we're going to work long and hard. By the way, another seminar coming up before that, and that's going to be a good one.
That's going to be menopause and andropause on January 15.
January 15. Okay.
Do you reserve your seat, please, by January 10? It's pretty much around the corner. You have to call 212-779-1744. That's menopause and andropause. That lecture on Wednesday, January 15 at 6 p.m.
And because we have Intelligent Medicine podcast listeners in such far-flung places as Indonesia, Thailand, and Poland, you're welcome to attend. And if you show us a ticket stub of your flight from one of those countries to New York City, we will provide you with a discount.
Terrific.
Mostly, I think realistically we're talking to people who are going to be in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and we invite them to attend. And coming up in 2014, incidentally, we're going to try and make some of these, these are events which are attended by dozens of individuals, but because of space limitations, not that many people can attend. Our classroom is large, but what does it hold? About 150 people. We're going to make an effort to provide these in some multimedia format, either via webinar or via recorded session. that we can share with our listeners worldwide. If you, you know, so don't despair if you can't get to New York. We're going to provide some of this education to you. That's all part of our plans going forward in 2014.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
And I'm sorry, by the way, to our listeners who sent us questions, we've got those questions on tap for a future edition of the weekly Q&A with Layla. If you got more questions, radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send the questions, and we will endeavor to answer as many of them as possible. That is, if we're not put into full damage control mode by yet another scurrilous attack. Natural medicine.
Putting out another fire, yes.
I don't know. It's tough being us, isn't it?
It is. It is.
I feel like.
But we will forge ahead.
I feel like an emergency response worker here. You know, it's kind of like to slide down the pole, you know, and jump into my emergency vehicle and rush to the scene of the disaster whenever these kind of stories come out. But, I think we did a pretty good job taking these studies apart. And,
I hope so.
We'll have more time to study it, and we'll share with you at the upcoming seminar. Check out my article in the Intelligent Medicine Newsletter, available via radioprogram@AOL.com. Thanks, Layla, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal, or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.